Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 165 of the Leading Learning Podcast. With the holidays upon us, we're giving ourselves a little breathing room by going back into the archives to feature an episode from the past that we think deserves a second listen. Specifically, we're going to replay a conversation Salisa and I had more than a year ago on some of the practices of internet marketers and how they might apply to your learning business. Before we do that, though, we want to let you know about our sponsor for this episode.
And that sponsor is Learning Technology Design, our annual virtual conference designed specifically for those who work in the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development. This will be our fourth time offering LTD, and we know from feedback we've received that past attendees have found it to be a unique and highly valuable experience. Registration is open at ltd.tagoras.com. We're also offering the opportunity to be a patron for LTD. That's an option that may be of interest to companies that serve learning businesses. You can find out more by going to ltd.tagoras.com/patron. And we want to thank and spotlight our current patrons: 360 Factor, Authentic Learning Labs, Avalar, Comm Partners, Digitel, EventGuard, ReviewMyLMS, and Web Courseworks.
And we've highlighted these patrons on the LTD website, and we'll also include links to them in the show notes for this episode. And definitely do take the time to find out more about them. These companies, they've demonstrated their commitment to learning businesses by becoming patrons, so we really encourage you to support them.
We also, of course, encourage you to register for LTD 2019. But in the meantime, we're going to cut to our conversation about internet marketing and how a little knowledge of what successful internet marketers do could go a long way in helping you to market your education business. If you are a longtime subscriber to Leading Learning, you may remember some of what we cover here, but it is definitely well worth reviewing. And if you are newer to the podcast, welcome. We certainly hope you will subscribe if you haven't already. And now, let's roll the archive.
So, speaking of subscribing, speaking of internet, websites, downloadable resources, we're going to focus in on the whole concept of internet marketing and specifically internet marketers and what they do, or at least what the really successful ones do to be successful. And we should probably clarify up front here what we mean when we say internet marketer. You know, we're not talking about just any old company or person who markets things online. In that sense, we're probably all internet marketers in one way or another. But this really applies specifically to entrepreneurs who make their living, and in some cases make a fortune, really, primarily through marketing and selling effectively online. So, you know, some examples of these types of people are Jeff Walker would be a big one, famous for his product launch series. Brendan Bouchard, the guys over at Internet Business Mastery, Ryan Dice. These are some of the people that we're talking about. And, you know, many internet marketers sell only digital products. That's all they do. Not all of them, but many of them do sell physical products and events and things like that. But digital products are big. Many of them have, you know, no physical store or offices. They may not even have products of their own. They may be doing affiliate marketing to generate sales from other people's products. But whatever their specific approach to running their online business is, there really is a core set of rules that we've found over time, just observing these people, because we do carefully observe them day in and day out to see what they're doing. There's really kind of a core set of rules that all of the successful internet marketers follow. And so we're going to go over, we've kind of grouped those into seven areas, seven rules, and we're going to share those seven rules in this episode.
And so the first rule is value first. And I know if you've been listening to our podcast or been following what we do at Tagoras, you know how we like to harp on value, because really, you know, you're not going to be able to sell or market anything effectively if you aren't offering something of value to your customers and your prospective customers. Now, the sort of added trick is that you've got to provide that value before you start charging for additional value. And this is something that internet marketers really get. They really understand that, you know, before people are going to be willing to pay a dime, they need to know that you actually have something of value, that you can actually help them with their problem or help them seize an opportunity. And even before handing over something like an email or other identifying information. So, you know, there's money, but then there's also this other information like an email. And I'd say that it's getting incredibly and increasingly competitive, so that people don't really want to, you know, hand over their email again unless they see that there's something of valuable. So you need practical, actionable types of resources that are freely available, freely in the sense of $0, and also available without having to sign up for anything. And so if you're having any sort of difficulty with your learning business, if your enrollments aren't where you want to see them, if you aren't getting the uptake in any of your, you know, among any of your offerings, what we would encourage you is to look at value. Are you actually offering something of value? And what can you offer that helps lead people logically to sign up for that course, to make that enrollment purchase, to sign up for your conference? What is it that you can do in terms of maybe brief videos or PDFs with a checklist or a variety of things? What can you do to provide some value so that people can begin to see what you know and what you can help them with?
And this is really the momentum area of the value ramp for folks that are familiar with our value ramp, and we'll link to the value ramp in the show notes so that you can see this. But this is, you know, providing those resources up front. Again, as you were saying, Salisa, you're not necessarily asking for an email address initially. It's a blog post. It's a podcast episode like this one happens to be. But getting attracting people to you because you're providing that value, then you may move to accepting or getting people to give you their emails. And then eventually, obviously, as the value escalates, you're going to move into charging for it and charging them more and more. But really thinking in terms of providing significant value up front so you can start that momentum and then take them up the value ramp. So value first, definitely. And we're all about that here at Tagoras. So number two is going to be that the money is in the list. And you will hear this again and again from successful internet marketers. Not that they don't use social media, not that they don't want to have search engine optimization on their website. All of that stuff is important, but they want your name on a list so that they can contact you. And they don't want just any names on their list. They want the right people to have opted in to their list so that they are then able to communicate with them. And you know, email comes in for a lot of criticism these days, or just a lot of worry that, you know, too much email is being sent. Actually, in our 10 ways resource for this episode, we point out that many organizations could probably be sending more email, though they need to have that value component in their emails. The fact is, you know, an email list, a good email list, is still really the number one way to sell, particularly educational products, whether those are online products or their events. We see it again and again with clients. That's where they are getting the most uptake, when they are able to send out a successful email and get the clicks from that. That's when they're going to get a registration. Now, there's a little bit of a twist on this. You know, if you're a membership organization, as many of the folks listening to this episode are, then obviously, you know, you've got your membership list. That's your membership email list. And so you're using that for your marketing purposes. And that's great. But a lot of times organizations don't really kind of cultivate and manage that list in the way they need to. Because just because somebody has signed up to be a member for you doesn't mean they're necessarily enthusiastic about what you're doing from an education standpoint. I mean, hopefully they are, at least initially. But, you know, really, for a membership organization or for any organization that has a large established list, maybe a customer list, whatever, you need to be looking at that over time, tending that list, segmenting that list, you know, really making sure that the people you're communicating want to hear from you. And oftentimes, you know, for an education department, this means, you know, stepping up and trying to, you know, grab a little ground, I guess, in the marketing department and say, you know, hey, we want to make sure that we are doing special offers that that make people sort of raise their hand and say, yes, I'm interested, so that we can see that. And we can see, you know, that this group of people that we have on our list are people who do want to hear from us about this thing, about this event, about this online course. But, you know, in general, you definitely do not want to leave your list building to chance. You don't want to just rely on a membership list. And if you don't have a membership list, then you want to be very actively doing everything you can to get people to sign up for your list so that you're able to contact them. And then you want to also, you know, cultivate and tend that list over time to make sure you've got the right people on there, people who are interested in hearing from you, and that when you are communicating with them, you're communicating something of value consistently to them so that they're interested in continuing to hear from you, sometimes buy from you, sometimes not, but certainly at least a portion of the time they're going to be buying from you.
So that second step is to have the good email list. The money is in the list, so it's a question of both quantity and quality.
You need
the right people, and you need as many of them as possible on that list. So the third rule is teaching sells. And so if you're in the learning business, then you know you're selling education, but the other thing to notice and to realize is that education itself is also a very powerful selling tool. And education-based marketing has been around for a long time, but the internet has really turned into an absolutely essential tool for all types of businesses. And back to that first rule of delivering value, you know, a great way to deliver value is to share useful knowledge with your customers and show them how to apply it. So you're really actually teaching them something. You're giving them a little bit of education. Now, sometimes ironically, I think that organizations that are in the learning business often aren't that great at realizing that they can use teaching and learning to actually sell, and you know, do things like even offering a free demo course and doing things like that that could help organizations reach customers who might be interested. Even that level of thing doesn't tend to happen very, very much. Or sometimes if there is free educational content, maybe it's behind the member paywall, which then means you already have to have, the person already has to have agreed to be a member before they can even sort of see that value that you're offering in the form of education.
That's right. And we do find that this really is a perennial issue with organizations. They've got things behind that member paywall. And in many cases, that means even the members aren't necessarily going to be aware of it. But it certainly means that prospective members who you could be getting on a list, you could then be marketing to both for educational and membership purposes, are not going to be aware of you. They're not going to be able to access that educational value, see what you have to offer, and then become more involved in the organization. So that is the teaching sales aspect of it. And then to kind of stick with that teaching model, I guess the number four we would say is that testing teaches. And we're not talking about the kind of test where you sit down with, you know, pen and paper or answer questions on an online form. We're talking about testing out your content and your marketing concepts in general. So, you know, one of the many reasons to put high value educational content in front of your prospects is that it gives you a chance to test the market. You can see what actually resonates, and you can do this in a low cost way. So, you know, a blog post or a quick video that's related to content for an event or a course that you plan to launch, you can see, does that get visitors? Does it get people to engage with it and share it? Knowing that, you know, can be really tremendously helpful in deciding whether to develop something or possibly how to develop it, because you'll get good market feedback. And, you know, there are many other ways in which internet marketers test their markets. One of the things that they do routinely is to run what are called A-B split tests on their emails, for example. So they'll send out two versions of the same email. email marketing programs are going to allow you to, you know, split who on your list to get sent to, and you'll see if, for example, one subject line does better than another, or if one slightly, you know, modified content in one email gets a different response than content in another. So, you know, you really have to be engaging in some level of testing. You know, even if you don't have the responsibility or the desire to get as technical as doing an A/B test, you need to make sure that there are people in your organization who know how to run those sorts of tests, and that, you know, you've got access to them and that they've got your ear and you're going to be able to get them to do that sort of stuff. If you don't have somebody in your organization, you can also find contractors who can help you with this type of testing work. A resource we often suggest is Upwork. Just go to Upwork.com to find contractors there, and you can explain, you know, that you're trying to do an A/B test or you're trying to test out different types of content, and people are going to know what you're talking about. And the final thing I'd mention in this area is something, a concept we've talked about many times before, which is just the minimum viable product. We'll link to some posts that we've done on this, but, you know, this is the idea that you get a product into the market that meets the essential value that your customers, members are looking for in terms of educational content, and you see what the response to that is before you go and build a full-blown course or an event or anything else. We advocate, for example, using live webinars to pilot the content that you might then put into an on-demand course later, but you don't take the step to fully investing in all of the instructional design and development that would go into the on-demand course. You start out with a webinar with a live audience, get their feedback, and use that to shape things. So all sorts of forms of just testing out your ideas out there, your product ideas, to see what's actually going to work with your market. Internet marketers do this all the time.
Well, and I just want to stress too that these are marketers, and they're really focused on the full picture of marketing, not just the promotion part of it, which I think gets a lot of attention when people do tune in to marketing, but also that product aspect of marketing, making sure, like you were just saying, Jeff, that you have that market evidence that people really like what you're offering out there. So you put out that MVP, that minimum viable product, you get the feedback, make sure that it's actually providing value the way you think it's going to.
Yeah, it's fundamental to how they do product strategy.
So the fifth rule is emotion rules. And this is a point that we've made in other places, especially around pricing. And we can point to a resource around that in the show notes as well. But, you know, value is about perception. You know, your customers, your prospective customers have to perceive value there. And when you think about perception, it's often driven by emotion, not so much logic, but you just kind of go, oh yeah, I like that, or I think that can help me. And it's a much more sort of heart-based versus head-based response to it. And so the really successful internet marketers, they know how to weave their products into a story that really gets that emotional response from the prospective buyer. And so they tend not to focus all that much actually on the products that they're selling, and they tend to focus more on the outcomes. So maybe it's more freedom, maybe it's more self-sufficiency, maybe it's better health, maybe it's less headache managing staff. You know, you begin to get the picture here. And I think we see a lot of organizations that sort of forget this point. And when they talk about a product and an educational offering, and they sit down to do the marketing, the promotion of it, they tend to focus on things like, you know, how much credit something offers, or the fact that it's convenient, or that it's timely. And those can be benefits, and I think that people can perceive those as valuable, but they don't tend to have that emotional pull, and they also tend to be the same kinds of things that competitors either are already touting or certainly can start to tout, and so it doesn't leave you in a particularly unique position. And so figuring out that emotional connection, that emotional story you want to make, that can be tough, and I think that's probably why it doesn't happen all that often. But it's really worth the effort to begin to make guesses about what matters to your learners. And so you want to make sure that you're listening to your learners, that you're observing them. This might be an area where you can do things like focus groups and interviews so that you really are hearing from the horse's mouth, from the learner's mouth, what it is they value, what they would like more of, what isn't helpful to them. And you begin to hear those stories that people are telling about their training and education and experiences, and then that begins to provide you with that fodder that you can really turn into this emotional story that you can put into your marketing.
Now, I will note this is the area where internet marketing can kind of go to the dark side in a way. You know, a lot of people, and unfortunately, rightfully so, do not have a high opinion of internet marketers. They can feel sleazy, manipulative. And it's often when that happens because they're doing the emotion thing poorly. They haven't really understood who they're talking to, and you know, they're trying to tug on people's heartstrings, but haven't really made the connection. And like you said, this is tough. I mean, this is where, you know, the good marketers really stand out. That you know, first of all, they're ethical and they are taking the time to really understand who they're talking to and what is meaningful to them, and they take it to heart, and it comes across in how they present themselves out to the marketplace that they're trying to serve. So if you can master the emotional side of the picture, that's, I mean, it's really, really powerful. This next one is also very powerful, number six, and this one is words matter. Yeah, right. Words matter. And we all know that attention is, you know, a really precious resource these days. So, you know, whether a prospect is surfing the web, opening an envelope, checking your inbox, you typically have a matter of seconds, or in many cases, milliseconds, during which she's going to decide whether or not to pay attention to you. So your choice of words in that brief time, that can make the difference between starting a long-term relationship or simply racking up another bounce, as they call it, you know, when somebody comes to your website and then basically leaves immediately because they haven't seen anything that feels like it's going to be of value to them. And then, you know, arguably even more important, once you have a prospect's attention, you need to make it count. You're going to need to convert them, because it's, you know, it's very nice to get their attention, but if they don't do anything with that, then, you know, it doesn't really matter. So, you know, here again, the words you use really count. So, you know, how do you convey the value that we talked about in the first point here as rapidly and effectively as possible and convince the prospect to take action, you know, whether that means actually making a purchase or whether it's simply signing up for an email list, as we talked about in number two, building your list. So successful internet marketers recognize that, you know, they either need to master the skills of great copywriting or they need to hire people who already have mastered those skills. And in many cases, the organizations that, you know, we're talking to through this podcast, who we work with, don't necessarily have somebody on staff who's got great copywriting skills. I mean, that's not just a general marketing skill. That's very specific. Somebody who's really trained and has that down to both an art and a science. But you can hire those people. And again, you know, a resource for this type of thing is to go to a site like Upwork.com, where you can find good copywriters. But I'd also say, you know, giving training to your marketing staff, getting training for yourself and how to write effective copy can be extremely powerful. And we'll also recommend a couple of books that we think are great for supporting this and giving you some good examples. And we'll recommend some other sites as well that you can visit for good copywriting advice. And again, you'll be able to find those in the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode109.
So we are at the seventh and final rule of internet marketing that we're going to offer. It's no process, no business. So if you think about these internet marketers, I mean, they're in it for the long haul. They're focused on building a scalable and sustainable business. So they're not just kind of, you know, one and done. They want to create something that they can continue to leverage. And so they tend to be masters of efficiency and really look for ways that they're going to help them grow their revenue and profitability without adding a lot of labor. And so they're doing things like, you know, creating these repeatable formulas or nailing down a process that they can reuse or a system that they're going to use to drive new business. And very often they will share all or at least significant parts of these processes and systems. And then that becomes part of how they market themselves. That's part of that value that they're offering out. And I think really importantly, they know that creating content once and then leveraging the heck out of it is really one of the most powerful ways to scale. And so, you know, if you think about something like starting with a video and then you can, you know, edit it down into shorter bits, you can extract the audio, you can create transcripts. And so just with this one kind of capture of the video, you can begin to have a variety of different offerings that offer value out there. Internet marketers also tend to really bake in continuous contact with customers. And so they're not having to kind of, you know, gear up for some big initiative to reach out to customers or prospects. That's just something that's happening automatically and naturally as they're emailing their lists and making offers, and they're paying attention to who responds to which offers, and they're using all of that to get to know their customers better and better. So in short, internet marketers recognize that great products are only part of the equation, and what you really have to have is an efficient, scalable process to go along with any products. And that's what's going to give you a sustainable business.
And this is a point we've really been trying to learn and make part of our business over time. We've looked to folks like John Jantz at Duct Tape Marketing, who has some great perspectives on this, and we'll link to him. And people like Ryan Dice, we have his invisible selling machine sitting on the desk in our office here, and have incorporated some of his methods into how we approach email automation and you know, how we're going to maintain engagement with our list over time. We have a process built into that whole list component of things. So that was number seven. And to recap the rules, we had number one, which was value first, making sure you're providing value even before you're asking for anything. Number two was the money is in the list. So, you know, making sure you're building that list. And even if you have the list, making sure you're tending it and cultivating it and, you know, really continuing to provide value to it in ways that are meaningful to the people who are on the receiving end. Number three was teaching sales. So we talked about the power of educational content as a marketing tool and tapping into that resource that, of course, learning businesses are naturally going to have, but aren't necessarily using. Number four is testing teaches. And again, this is not a school test. This is testing out your ideas in the marketplace and getting feedback that helps you to decide your strategic direction, your product strategy, just figure out what's going to work. Number five was emotion rules. So, you know, trying to really connect with people, not just at a logical, intellectual level, but at an emotional level, because that's where most decisions, including buying decisions, are usually made. Number six was words matter. So being able to write great, compelling copy that gets attention and then leads people to converting, to actually, you know, signing up, purchasing, whatever it is that that you want them to do. And then finally, no process, no business. You really need to be able to take all of this and get it into a process, or you'll drive yourself crazy, frankly. You know, you've got to be able to repeat this, automate it, really make it kind of a machine. Ryan Dice uses the word, or the words, invisible selling machine for a reason. It's a lesson definitely to take to heart.
So you just recapped those seven rules, Jeff, and those are what successful internet marketers do, but it's really important to note that they follow them consciously, that they tend to be very clear about their overall strategy and very deliberate in how they proceed with executing on that strategy. And so the important thing to note is that strategy is the context that makes these rules work for you.
And we'll wrap up this special archive edition of Leading Learning with that note about strategy. To get show notes for this episode, just go to leadinglearning.com/episode165.
When you check out the show notes, you're going to see various options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of what you hear and even rehear here, we would be truly grateful if you would subscribe, as it helps us to get some data on the impact of what we're doing with the podcast.
And we'd also be grateful if you take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes or whatever service it is that you use to listen to us. For iTunes, all you have to do is go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. Salise and I personally appreciate your rating and review, especially at this holiday time of year. You can consider it a little bit of a gift to us. But even more importantly, those reviews and ratings play an important role in helping the podcast show up when people search for content on the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development.
We'd be grateful if you'd check out our sponsor for this episode, Learning Technology Design, at ltd.tagoras.com. Again, this is our annual virtual conference, and if you, like most of our Leading Learning listeners, work in the business of lifelong learning, continuing education, and professional development, it is an event not to be missed.
And finally, consider telling others about the podcast. You can send a tweet by going to leadinglearning.com/share. You can also like us on Facebook at facebook.com/leadinglifelonglearning. And of course, you can share us with others there. However you do it, please do help share the good word about Leading Learning.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.